Shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Bedtime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't it taking me where I'm bound.
When it's gone, I run. Welcome to Nocturnal Journal tonight on WGN here in Chicago. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and we're going to do a deep dig. On the line, we have Paul Rock, director of the Wild Honey Foundation out in Los Angeles. How you doing, Paul?
I'm great. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
For listeners, last night we promoted A.J. Croce. We've got a tape of him. We're going to play that. That'll be up by tonight, so listeners can hear that on the WGN website. So we're going to, because of the length of the game, we're going to extend our interview here with Paul. So there's a lot of components I want to get to, Paul. But first of all, let's just tell the listeners, what is the Wild Honey Foundation?
Well, right now it's ever evolving, but we do concerts. We produce benefit concerts. That's been our primary thing, but we're branching out to film screenings, and we're going to start webcasting pretty soon from my garage. Mm-hmm. But we primarily try to dig into things that we love that maybe are kind of overlooked musically and pop culture wise, and that's kind of what we concentrate on.
Give us some examples.
Well, we started out as inspired by the Beach Boy record Wild Honey, mm-hmm. So that's where we come from. And so we did a Beach Boys tribute in 1994, where we had Alex Chilton and we actually conned Brian Wilson into coming down and performing his first solo performance ever. So we were championing the Brian Wilson solo thing for many, many years. So that's kind of the origins of where we started.
I'm curious. What songs did Chilton? What did Chilton do? What was the set like, I guess?
He did two songs. He did. Solar System.
Okay.
And. So it was pretty deep dive for Alex that night. But Alex was a huge fan, and he did his big thrill of the night though was hanging out backstage with Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
So he actually is such a fan that 2 weeks after the concert, he called me up and said, "Paul, that was the best night of my life." Just because he got to hang with Brian for hours, because the show went for 4 hours, so he was backstage with Brian, catching up, because he had known Dennis Wilson in the 60s, but always wanted to hang with Brian, but never had gotten the chance. So we did Alex Chilton, one of his all-time fan moments. So.
And you also have done tributes, like for some reason, I'm going to be on a road trip starting tomorrow. There's a little record store I always stop at in St. Louis, Euclid Records. I wrote down on my note of things to do to get some Hollies vinyl. Talk about some of that. You've done the Hollies, Elvis Costello. Talk about some of the tribute shows you've done, too.
Yeah, well, recently we did the Buffalo Springfield. We did a Big Star show with Chris Stamey. We did that Big Star Third thing. We did a co-production with that. We did a Beach Boys show that was just from 1967 to 1977.
Oh, really?
So we had Brian Wilson's band was heavily involved, as well as Al Jardine.
Wow.
And so that was quite a night, because people got to hear stuff that, to me, is kind of the most beautiful stuff, post-Pet Sounds to Love You, and we did it in exactly the way that people wanted to hear it, with all the Brian Wilson band's guys doing the harmonies and everything else, and Al sings just like it's 1965 still, so it was pretty amazing. And then we did Richie Furey. I was with the did the Buffalo Springfield show, and he did about 9 songs.
Oh wow!
And And he was pretty stunned by the band. He was, when he got there, the rehearsal, he was like, oh my God, it's like, we were doing On the Way Home in the rehearsal, which is a song he sang, by a Neil Young song that he sang, but he'd never done it with an orchestra and then with a horn section ever. And he turned around. He was like with the biggest smile on his face. He couldn't believe this was happening. So he was our best friend after that. So he did an amazing performance. And we had Garth Hudson play our band show.
Oh wow! Wow.
And that was a trip.
Wow.
Because Garth, man, he just does whatever he wants in terms of soloing and whatever. So Garth did like a 20-minute piece.
Oh, no, really?
Kind of in the middle, instrumental. That was, kind of the prelude to the wait.
And, really? Wow.
It was kind of amazing. It really, he's still got it. He's in his early 80s, but he can still play there's no tomorrow. And all the keyboard, I have like 8 keyboard players who play in the Wild Honey Orchestra, and all they could do is just like stand around and gawk at Garth,
right.
During the rehearsals, during the show. Everybody was like, oh, Garth, oh my God, it's Garth, he's here, so.
And
that was in
go ahead, when was that?
2017. That was in 2017, the band show.
What's the venue like?
We do the Alex Theater in Glendale, which is a pretty amazing place in terms of it's kind of the right size. It's 1,400 seats, 1920s movie theater, and they've got this colossal backstage that the city of Glendale put a lot of money into, and so they can actually handle the number of people that we have on our big concerts. So that's a big plus for us there, because we have like 80 people on stage at some point during the shows.
Wow.
And so
do you have some coming up? Big concerts?
We are just hoping to announce our 2020 big show soon.
Okay.
There's still discussion.
We'll be sure to tell our listeners.
Yes, and we try to, we have this Rob Loffer, who's our musical director, who's incredible, and he did Sergeant Pepper with George Martin at the Hollywood Bowl with Cheap Trick.
Oh wow!
So he was the musical director for that with George. They did this. So Rob is an amazing talent. He puts in a lot of hours into every show. And so that really has upped our game over the last 5 or 6 years. It's not just a ragtag bunch of people coming together for one night. It's just like kind of a extended family who love to play with each other and rehearse about maybe, 10 or 15 times before the show. So people are ready, and they do an amazing thing. And we did the Kinks this year. That was our 2019. We did Kinks basically 65 to 68.
Yeah, I was going to ask the period. Yeah.
With an emphasis on preservation.
Okay. How are the big shows? We'll get to the smaller backyard movie, which we're going to talk about. But how are the bigger shows selected? Do you have a board? Or do you pick them?
I decide what I love so much so that I can work on 9 months.
Yeah, really.
That's pretty much the deciding factor. People always come up with ideas, and they're saying, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And I go, well, I kind of like that, but I don't think I really want to work the next 9 months on that idea. And it's pretty exhaustive, in terms of the way we do it. We go down to every detail. So, if you don't really care about the details in the first place, then I'm not going to do it. So that's kind of the ultimate deciding factor. Plus, there's a core of people, I mean, obviously, we'll always go back to the Beach Boys because that's, kind of my main thing. But we've done a whole variety of stuff. So, it's always a debate because everybody is who's involved in the shows is you know, music crazy people. So
yeah, right. And obviously, yeah, so so passionate about music.
Everybody has very strong ideas, and as well as I do. So, and usually, since I'm the one who puts in the promotional time and all the other stuff, then I feel like if I can't do it, then we're not going to do it. So.
And who comes to these? Our friend Kerry Baker, who actually hooked us up, you know, he said it's a strong, it's a really large group of like really, really passionate music fans. And is it industry people?
Oh, yeah.
You know, talk about who comes.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty wide variety of people. But I would say, and a lot of people bring their kids, too, you know, so... You know, it's. I would say that most of the people are between the ages of 40 and 65, but then there's a whole other generation of people who bring their, you know, their 20-something kids, who are into the vinyl, as they say. It's a lot of music. It's actually a lot of musicians. I mean, L.A. has a lot of musicians, and we get most of them to show up for our shows, I think. And producers and, you know, anybody who makes music in Los Angeles, I think, has been to one of our shows, I think. We end up with, it's usually 1,400 people. We sell out pretty much every year within 10 to 50 tickets maybe left over every now and then. But generally, we sell out. And...
I believe that Gary Stewart of Rhino was part of your community, wasn't he?
Gary was one of our patrons. Yes, we absolutely love Gary.
He passed away in April. Talk about Gary and just how important he was in this type of music.
Well, Gary and I share a lot of things in common in terms of taste. So he was always really crazy about anything we did because it would always strike the same nerve that it struck with us. So, and Gary would, you know, call us up after the show and say, and give us a laundry list of things that he loved and he didn't love. So Gary was very opinionated and he would always give us a great feedback because, you know, Gary was very knowledgeable and he knew all the music that we were doing intimately. And Gary would routinely, one time we did the Continental Drifters.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I love those guys. Yeah. Susan Kyle Sill
and Vicky.
Yeah,
right. Exactly, with Vicky and Susan Kyle Sill and Peter Holsapple and all those guys. And they were all, like, part of our ensemble, really. You know, Vicky plays almost every show. Susan steals the show every year. It's, you know, incredible. Yeah. And anyway, so Gary he took a great interest in when we brought all 10 original Continental Drifters, everybody who'd ever played in the Continental Drifters, we brought to Los Angeles for 2015 and two shows. And we sold out the first show, and we didn't sell out the second show. And Gary was so blown away by the first show, he said, "Oh, Paul, I'm going to buy out the second show."
God bless him.
So he would give me like, you know, $3,000, and you know, and you know, they're all for the autism think tank, and so it was a good cause, but he just wanted people to be there for the music, you know. He didn't want this great show to go unseen, and that was pretty much the story of Gary. You know, if he wanted you to hear something, he had all the stuff in his trunk.
You mentioned,
and he would
go ahead.
He would give it to you.
You mentioned the way you work on this is your ear and eye for detail. He did all those box sets. He had that same.
Yes.
He was a real completist. Talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we worked with Gary several times as co-producers. We did the Big Star Show with him. With his company, and he and I worked on that. He paid for the entire thing. Like he brought out the whole ensemble. He put them up in hotels. He paid for just, you know, like an incredible amount of money. And because Gary had it and he wanted to spend it on things he loved. And we also did the Everly Brothers show in the 90s for one of his charities. And And so he brought in, like, I don't know, 30 Everly Brothers box sets from Rhino. And these were big, like, expensive sets. And he gave them to me to sell. And we actually made more money off the... It was in a small theater, so it wasn't a big, like, thing. But we did more off the box sets than we did off the tickets, even though we sold out. So that's the kind of thing Gary would do. And you know, he was a great friend of ours. And we put together a little private tribute concert to him at McCabe's recently, right after his death. It was very emotional. Everybody really misses Gary. It was the rock of the Los Angeles music scene. Just because if you went to a good show, you knew Gary was going to be there. He was always there. So everybody is still, I think, pretty upset by his suicide. So it was not the kind of thing that you expected from Gary, but.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think depression is a horrible thing, and he never really. I think he had medication and he had therapy and he had all the thing, but he, you know, that wasn't enough, I guess. So,
okay, Paul, we're gonna take a break here for the news, and then we're gonna come back. I do want to talk about where the proceeds go on the autism thing. Tank. And then we'll talk about our little thing we got coming up at the end of the month.
Which I'm excited about.
Yeah. So I don't want to bury the lead, but I want people to know what you guys are all about, you know. So
yes. Okay. No, great.
So don't go away. We'll be back with more of Paul Rock and the Wild Honey Foundation after this on WGN.
Thank you.
I could describe your pants and your shoes from France. But tell me, what can be said about that bang on your head? It sure is big. I dig your wig.
I dig your wig. Great Ben Vaughn. How you doing there? You there, Paul? Paul? Paul, I hope there's no more earthquakes in L.A. Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We lost you there.
I'm here.
You're back.
Okay. No.
We were playing a little Ben
feedback.
Vaughn. We were playing a little Ben Vaughn to whet the appetite for the.
Ben's out and he's out in the desert sometimes, so he probably got a lot more than we did.
Yeah, talk about that before we get into our thing. Before the show, listeners will want to know, what part of L.A. are you in right now?
We're in Eagle Rock, which is sort of northeast Los Angeles, right near Pasadena. So that's where we live. So we're about 10 miles north of downtown Los Angeles. So,
and what was it like? I've never been in. I've been through a lot of things.
Well, it's a rolling kind of thing. And my TV was shaking back and forth, and it was kind of rolling. Not a pretty mild thing for us in terms of, you know, I was here in the 94 earthquake when my bookcase fell on top of me while I was sleeping.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's a real earthquake, and I'm sure that's exactly how it felt with the people who were out in the desert in the Mojave where the actual earthquake happened. So the farther you are away, the lesser the jolt. So.
Talk about your path into music. I've never met you, but we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, you did spend some time in Downers Grove in the Chicago area, but talk about your background. You went to U of I.
I went to U of I. I had record stores in U of I at my post college record store period in the early 80s, where I worked at three different record stores in Champaign in the early 80s. One of which I owned, the other two I was just working at, and kind of at the cusp of all the, you know, the from 1981 to 1985. That was my beginnings of working in music, you know, full time basis. And then I worked with Paul Chastain of Velvet Crush. And I moved to Los Angeles in 1986 and I worked at Aaron's Records, which was the premier indie record store in Los Angeles. I worked there for 15 years. And that's when I met all the people that we do wild honey with, through errands.
Through errands.
So people would come in, I'd buy their used records, and then I'd sell them indie records, and we'd talk about the Beach Boys, and we ended up forming this like kind of extended family of music fanatics and who produced these crazy concerts.
How's the record industry now? Are you still involved in it?
No. My full-time job is working as an autism dad at this point. So that's the other half of the wild honey equation. Is the reason we got really heavily into it again, starting in 2013.
Okay, we'll talk about that. The proceeds, about the autism think tank, and talk about your son Jake.
Yeah, my son Jake, he was very self-injurious, and which, you know, instead of hurting others, he would hurt himself. And whenever he was in pain or upset, and he had all kinds of issues that were causing him to do that, and we sought out help, and this neurologist that we were going to said, why don't you try the think tank, autism think tank? I'm the head doctor, and what they do is she heads a team of specialists in autism who, you know, do research and are at the cutting edge of treatment in all different areas, like stomach stuff, neurology, every aspect of autism, which is a lot of aspects, and it's all phases of your being, really. And so they do it on an internet teleconference. So you give them your case, and then they look at you and make recommendations.
Really?
So. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because people, you know, there's a lot of ignorance in terms of autism. People don't really understand all the facets of it, and this gives people an opportunity who would, you know, they instead of their normal pediatrician, so anybody in the country can do this, and we've generated over $200,000 in scholarships so people can do it for free.
Good for you.
Through our shows. And so you basically, if you go to your normal pediatrician, you don't get the cutting edge of what's going on in autism. You just get sort of the watered down generic, you know, treatment. And so by this, you get to actually talk to the people who are doing the research. And it's since autism has exploded in this country, there's a lot of research going on, and there's a lot of good research going on, and you get access to that. And it's moving very fast. And just in the last 5 years, the view of autism has changed. I mean, it's now looked at as an autoimmune disease by many people, many specialists. And so the treatments have changed. But we're able to give people access to that through this, where, you know, they won't get that if they just go to their normal pediatrician.
You know, our show has a wide reach, both live and through the podcast version. How can people, if someone's listening, how can people find out more about this? Can you lead people to...
Yeah, they can go to the Autism Think Tank, NJ, which is for New Jersey, .org. And everything is explained on the website. It's very detailed. And how they can donate, how they can talk to the induction people about getting a conference, and they can also talk to me at Wild Honey Foundation at yahoo.com on email, and I refer people all the time, and I can also refer them for scholarships so they can go for free.
How's Jake doing?
Jake's doing really well. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things that we got through our neurologist who's involved in the think tank, she gave us this broccoli extract. And I tell people this, and they don't believe me, but John Hopkins did a credible study about this. And then, so basically what we give him these capsules, three a day now, and since we started that, his self-injury has completely stopped.
Wow.
Yeah, he does not hit himself anymore. He used to come home black and blue from school terribly, you know, and as early, you know, just before we started this, you know, so he's 15 now, and when he was 13, he was doing this, and he was getting big, and we were getting worried.
Because
he was going to start, you know, knocking himself out, literally.
Well, how does that work? You know, why does it work that way with that extract? I mean, what's the
thing is, researchers saw that when kids with autism had fevers, like when they were like a strong fever when they were fighting off a illness, their behaviors would stop. And they observed
this. Really?
Yeah, and so basically what they're thinking, the thinking is, the theory at least, is that the immune system was being distracted by fighting off this virus. So it was taking time off from fighting the body, you know, like you know, just in an autoimmune disease, your immune system is attacking you, basically.
Wow.
And they figured that, well, it's, you know, it's getting, and I'm not sure how the leap of consciousness went from observing that to figuring out that the way this broccoli extract, which is very concentrated, which is like the equivalent of 4 pounds of broccoli in one capsule. I mean, it's Crucera. It's like the active ingredient in broccoli. So this somehow simulates that fever effect.
Wow. Well, we got to take a break.
It has an effect on the immune system it's done in this quantity.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it's not lasting. It doesn't cure them.
Yeah.
But if you keep it up, it works for us at least. And so I can't really say for anybody else, but it's been observed for other, and the studies were very positive. But we actually, the company that makes this extract, Thorn, they actually had a production issue and weren't able to make it for like 6 weeks. So we ran out.
Wow.
And we couldn't get it we tried a different brand, and he started hitting himself again.
Oh my goodness.
We had the first tantrum and self-injurious tantrum in like a year and a half.
Wow. Okay, we got to take a break.
And then we got it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got to take a break here for some spots.
Okay, sure.
And we'll come back. So don't go away. This is that's what's great about radio. We are really learning a lot of stuff. So don't go away with Paul Rock of Wild Honey Foundation on WGN.
Sure.
Sid Straw, not the toughest girl in the world. She recorded that with the Skeletons the first time out. Is that your dog?
It's my dog.
Okay. What's the dog's name?
Bronx.
Okay.
He's got his own following on Facebook.
Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure there's no more earthquakes. Okay. All right.
No. He's just barking. He barks at everything.
So here we are. This has been a fascinating interview, but we haven't talked about the documentary.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's my problem, Paul. I never get around to it.
It's a big subject. We have a lot of stuff. But we've been doing the backyard music with films. We've done two others.
Which ones were those? What were the other two?
We did a Jack Nietzsche documentary.
Okay.
And which was amazingly fascinating. And we actually had I put together a string combo, and they played a 45-minute set of Jack's instrumental songs.
Wow.
And we did that, and then we did the movie, and then we did a Dennis Hopper movie. And now we're doing the
Center of Nowhere,
Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, and it's going to be at I'll be out there 7 p.m. July 27th with Ben Vaughn. We played some Ben Vaughn there, and with Robbie Foulkes.
Yes.
So talk about for my own thing. How does all this work? I mean, talk about where the venue is at and what goes first. And I know you're going to have food.
Sure. Yeah, we'll have food. I have this wonderful restaurant. This woman she's like real close by, and she donates all the food for all our backyard events. And we do Italian food, and it's incredible. And then, And then what we do is, in my backyard is kind of a natural amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes down to a covered deck where the musicians play and the movie screen is, and we put up to 100 people in my backyard in chairs, and it seems to work pretty well.
And proceeds go back to the Autism Think Tank.
They do, mm-hmm. they do, and so everybody. You know, and also what we do too is when we do just music, and I have someone who's, you know, since we do so many, I usually split the proceeds with the artists. You know, when we do just a concert, like I did Melanie, and
did you really?
Yeah, and I gave her a place to stay and half the proceeds, and it worked out very well. So. So we like to compensate the musicians, you know, I mean, and when they do a full concert, you know, and the movie music thing is a little different because it's not the same.
Robbie, but, I know Robbie's going to be excited. He just kind of moved out there. So,
we're excited to have him. I think he's, you know, we're always trying to get new people to do our events. And, you know, he's definitely on the list. And Carrie Baker is always talking about Robbie. And I'm pretty familiar with this stuff. And I think and Ben I go way back with. He actually gave me Alex Chilton's phone number.
Yeah.
In 1994.
Yeah. So. That's about the time I did Ben and I always talk about it. I did a interview. I linked them up together on the phone for the Sun-Times. And they talked. It was great. Ben and Alex, yeah. You know, and Alex could be, you know, up and down, but it was one of those interviews where I had them talking together and I just dropped out and they just like started talking to each other. It was, I love both of those.
If Alex liked you, he was very, 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 very cooperative and outgoing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he didn't like you, then you weren't going to get anything out of him.
Yeah. That's right.
Not one word.
So how can people, and this will be, again, on a podcast, and people can hear
right.
it all over. How can people find out more about going to the movie on the 27th?
Well, they can just go to the Wild Honey Foundation page on Facebook, and they will find all the information there. And also brown paper tickets.
Right.
Also, if you do a search for Wild Honey, you'll come up with it as well.
And I believe we'll put a link to that on when we post this.
Yeah.
On our
and we link the music with the film, and so people get a 45-minute performance of music to maybe even an hour before the movie, and then when the sun goes down, then we start the movie. So the music will start at 7 and the movie will start at 8.
I mean, we're kindred spirits, and that's kind of what our film, I mean, there's this whole scene in Springfield, Missouri, and that's what Lou Whitney used to call it, the center of nowhere. It's like Robbie says in the film, it's a hard place to get to. But your whole DNA there's like just paying tribute to some of these, I don't want to say forgotten, but maybe neglected or overlooked artists. I mean, you know. It's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a perfect fit for us. I mean, you know, I mean, we like... The Jack Nietzsche thing was a great example of that. This is, when I was living in the Midwest, the Morels would come into Champaign, and so we would see them there, and then that's how we learned about Springfield. My friend Steve Scariano, who you might know, he works at a record store in St. Louis still,
uh-huh.
but he was one of my partners back in the Champaign record store.
Oh really?
So he would bring in all the people from down his way to come up because he grew up in St. Louis and he lives there now, but he lived in Champaign for many years and with us and doing the record store at the time. So he's the one who'd introduced me to the Springfield sound in the early 80s.
In the couple minutes we have left,
sure.
Again, this deals with community and the spirit and what you guys do. Talk. Sid Straw
Definitely.
Is in our doc. I mean, ours was a total DIY doc. It took like 7 years,
right.
And we did a little handheld with her. She was doing a house concert here in Chicago. But talk about what you guys have done with her. And I'm just knocked up by the response. I mean, I know you're. I mean,
yes.
I keep an eye on it. But in one day, you raised $17,000 out of a $25,000.
Yes.
I know it's exceeded that. So talk. about Sid's situation and how you stepped up to help her.
Well, Sid's been a great contributor to all our shows, and she always knocks it out of the park at the big shows, and she particularly was amazing at the Beach Boy show when she did a Dennis Wilson solo number. And anyway, so Sid, Sid is an artist who needs help. It's very difficult to make a living as a musician these days, and she inherited a home from her. Her father, who was an actor,
Jack Straw.
Yeah. And but of course, it's not always the best thing to inherit a home. It may seem like a really good thing, but in this case, the home was always in bad shape from the day she got it, and then it got frozen out and flooded this past winter, and it was completely uninhabitable. It's like she can't even go in there without getting sick, and she also lost her vehicle as well, and so she's basically been, when she's not been sleeping on other people's couches, she's been sleeping on her porch in a tent, in Vermont. And so we love Sid, and we've been very close with Sid. And so we decided to get it. I got friends in Vermont. I got them to go find out exactly what she needed. We itemized it all, and we put it up on a GoFundMe. And the response has been amazing, because everybody who makes a comment, and people can go there and look at these comments, and they're just beautiful. And, Dave Alvin goes, why else am I on this earth, if I can't help you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's, done many duets with Dave, and they're longtime friends. And, yeah.
And Dave, where is it at now? It's over $30,000, right?
Yeah, we're at 30, like one and a half. And we've also had some outside donations for house concerts.
Good for you.
We're a little higher than that even, and so we're going to be able to do what we need to do. And but everybody has expressed so much love for Sid, and you don't always get that. Even if people do, they don't get the chance to express that. And I think that's really been the most heartwarming thing about this, is that everybody has been, giving their Sid moment on the page after they give their donation, about how she changed their life, or how lovely she was to them, 30 years ago. So it's just like, it's basically been her George Bailey moment.
Oh, good.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I'm really pleased. I personally was a little leery about doing it, just because, how are we going to do? I didn't know. Yeah. Because we needed a lot of money, and I was like, sometimes it's hard to get money like that, but not with Sid.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Because people love her.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us tonight and doing little bit
My
of an
pleasure.
Extended interview. We got in a lot of stuff, but that autism stuff is just fascinating. I really hope we can help some people out who heard that tonight. So
yes, and I encourage everybody to contact me, find me on Facebook. If they have a child who's having issues with self-injury, I get a lot of people who contact me, because we have a lot of luck. And Jake's on Facebook. Jake, okay. I keep a diary of his stuff there.
All right, thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye.